Hello and welcome to The Dive, presented by Honda, Season 5, Episode 16. This is the episode immediately following Cloud Nine's glorious 3-0 stampede to victory.
Best team in the tournament.
Is that supposed to be like an evil anime pose? We're not just going to ignore this. What was that?
No, we're ignoring it. are we going to not ignore that Kobe said episode or something?
Yeah, well, we can address that. But first things first.
what did he even do?
He's just sitting in the camera. He's just opposed.
He's trying to be an evil genius.
No, I'm just saying, you know, the C9 master plan worked out. Perks hit his 1-2 power spike. Week 2 perks as well, you know, like all the memes and the prophecies came true. It was as planned.
It was an absolute banger. Absolute banger. Great job, Kobe. Episode was funny as well.
I'm going to have to go back and check the tapes.
Maybe I'm just cracked out. I don't know.
Honestly though, groups were packed with a lot of good stuff, right? Yeah. If we're going off of the North American thread and the memes, Oceanic tournament was added to North America residency for their players, and yet they now get their first team through, which is what basically was the play-in stage, to the main stage. And congratulations to Pentanet. Let's go. Round of applause all around. Honestly, we also had cool upsets from, you know, Pain Gaming got a lot more competitive games and wins than they have in the past. DFM as well today, giving Dom1 a run for their money every game that they played them, getting the win off of Cloud9. If we add Vietnam to Worlds play-in stage, I'm actually really excited for play-in stage this year for Worlds.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with the performance of these wildcard regions thus far at MSI group stage, and hopefully, oh my god, Vietnam will be able to show up, will be able to actually come as well. It's actually going to be filled with action.
I think it's going to be amazing. I mean, one of the things that I really kind of hit home, I think both watching MSI and prepping for this tournament as well, is how good a lot of these players are mechanically now, right? I think that in the past, it was much more common for the major region teams to just slam the games through laning phase, just because the basic skills were not on the same level, right? You know, now that seems so much less common. These guys have really upped their game, I think, mechanically, almost across the board, and it's getting more and more difficult to continue beating them, right? Now it's more things that I think are less obvious, like the decision-making and maybe macro plays. You know, maybe not all five of them are as strong individually and these types of things, but I've been really impressed, and I agree, Kobe, you know, especially with DFM getting their new support, because I think it's Steel is going to become resident, so Gang can sub in, I believe is the mix-up that they're going to be having, so they should be even stronger. Vietnam, we haven't gotten to see in a while. They've been looking really good. The PCS has been looking good, so I think it's really, really exciting.
You got something, Mark?
No, I mean, Zale hit with the DFM one, because I was definitely going to say that, like, on the point about, like, individual mechanics not being the, like, reasons that people are losing anymore, it's like, well, they should have won the first time they played. They just made a terrible decision at the third inhib, you know? And it's like, those are the areas they're falling short now.
I like it.
And even the second game they played, you know, like, it was scrappy back and forth. They got their own plays off versus the former world champions. Zale, it's not that funny.
I don't know. It just cracked me up. What can I say?
I'm just trying it on for size. I'm a fan,
feels
Mark.
Feels good.
It's like try it, Zale. You got to give it a...
No, I think I'm good.
You have the glasses, too, so you can even do like the push-up.
Oh, the little push-up, the anime push-up.
I was going to say, I think it might actually work. It's going to work best for Zale, because he's got the shiny bald as well.
Are you saying bald people are evil?
Is your chair
spin? The evil mastermind?
If we go by the movies, okay? If we go by the movies... Dr. Evil, you know.
what about the cool ball people? Like, you know, we got Vin Diesel. We got some sweet action heroes and stuff, you know.
The Transporter.
Right. Jason Statham, yeah.
Exactly.
Jason Statham is definitely a badass. So, those are some big devs for ball people. All right, we got some sick Apple Podcast reviews. The meta is shifting. I never saw this one coming. We got a few this week. This one comes from Mr. Travi XD. Says Dive is peak League of Legends content. Well, now that JLXP is gone, at least pour one out for Jet. RIP. Also, Mark Z deserves more recognition. I mean, look at his hair. Sorry, Zale. More shots at the bald guy. I see there's a trend here on this episode. We got another one here. This one's from Caldera 857. Dive is great. Love the show. Never miss an episode. Coming in with the meta-breaking counterpick. Mark C is the best on the show. He brings the best analysis, the funniest jokes. No offense to the other guys, but I cannot stand by with all these one-sided reviews. Once again, great show. Cap for Kobe. 5 stars. All right, last one here. This one comes from Pro A. It's time to break the meta. This is everyone's idea. Everyone has had enough of the Mark C abuse. Mark C is the Alvari of the dive, pulled down by a former CLG player, yikes, and a now washed up WoW pro. Mark C to the moon! All right, 5 stars. Thank you for the reviews. This is good. I like this.
I made a lot of alt accounts this week. I'm not working MSI for the main broadcast. I had a lot of time to make other accounts and make all these reviews. And as you noted, Azale, I didn't have much variety in them. They're all kind of like, break the meta. Mark's cool. Haha, right, guys?
This is interesting, you know, because unprompted, we had the initial review, like the initial meta was just roasting Mark C. That's how you got onto the show. And now you gotta praise Mark C. So I'm interested to see what the meta will be going forward here.
I mean, this is classic internet reverse circle jerk, right?
Yeah.
There was circle jerk one way, and then always it's just the way the internet works. It's coming back the other way, baby. Mark's on top. Let's go. Your time to shine.
It's not going to last long then.
I'm going to enjoy my moment in the spotlight before everyone's just like, wait a minute. He's getting way too much hype. He's overhyped.
Does anyone else think Mark gets way too much credit on the dive? Yeah. All right, you can leave us your reviews on Apple Podcasts. I love the one this week. All right, on to the MSI meta. There was so much talk about what was going to change, you know, what picks were going to be the hotness coming into MSI this week. You know, what were the big standouts for you guys?
Lee Sin, solo lane, baby. Let's lay it down right off the bat. We had a bet brewing about it. We talked about this before the show started. Azale's going to try and weasel his way out with some technicalities here, but Mark, as the impromptu judge for the situation, he is impartial. He's also been voted by viewers as the best part of the show. So I think
no one more gets
Mark Z, a man you can trust.
All right, so Kobe, why don't you, for people who don't know, what was the bet and what is Azale's defense afterwards?
So the bet was on if solo lane Lee Sin was going to be successful and prominent at MSI. And honestly, it wasn't just Azale who had doubts about this. I saw in the comments as well, people were like, you know, Kobe, I don't agree with your take. I don't think Kobe's solo queue is real indicative of pro play.
I remember seeing that one too.
Yeah, if you know the right things to look for in solo queue, every strategy starts in solo queue first. You know, it doesn't actually just start in pro play. You just have to look, you know, the right things to look for. Anyways, I was very pro Lee Sin, willing to bet on it, but we never came up with a bet, so we didn't have stakes.
We can figure something out if you want me to pay up. You know, I don't want to be wimping out on the bet, but for me, the main thing was I didn't think it was going to be prominent in mid lane. You know, top lane I felt like fits in more because it's more of like the standard bruiser tanky style, whereas I didn't think people would play it mid because I think it changes fundamentally the way you have to play the game. You know, removing control mages, removing more of the team fight style, and a lot of teams aren't comfortable playing, you know, the Renekton's mid and that sort of stuff. We did see some Lee Sin mid. We got 4 of it. 3 of them were from Chaz, and Saren played 1 game. So it is in there. None of the kind of like tournament favorites have played it yet, but I'm going to be excited to see if that develops because it's definitely, I'm all on board the top lane Lee Sin hype train. I think that's up all there. Right. I've been interested to see though that the pros all seem to think that it's just garbage for jungle, but in solo queue, you know, to talk about solo queue point that you had made, it's actually dominating. You know, it's the highest win rate of the 3 roles by far is actually jungle. Even when you're looking Masters Plus and the highest levels, it's like 56, 57% win rate last I checked. So it's definitely crushing it in solo queue, but I've seen a number of pro junglers, you know, at MSI talking about how it's just trash in the jungle right now. But it's interesting because, you know, Perks in his interview after they actually had qualified, you know, he mentioned how everyone coming into the tournament also thought Udyr was trash and that it wasn't going to be the meta at all. And now he's like, well, turns out Udyr is just still the best champ.
So, yeah, I have bone to pick with that because everybody did definitely not think that Udyr was dead. Everybody thought Hecarim was dead. And those two are
well, maybe
closely
he just maybe I'm misquoting slightly. Maybe he just meant like they're weak. I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Definitely some wiggle room there, but you know, Turbo Chem Tank getting nerfed was the only like real direct one towards Udyr. He had gotten some attack damage stuff, and Phoenix Sand stuff taken down previously. But yeah, he's still just fine. Clears just fine as well, and still gets to run pretty damn fast.
So all right, so we have to thank Chaz for being a fan of the dive and making sure that Azale loses the bet. He'll be doing the Lee Sin dance. He's going to recreate it for us
yikes.
On TikTok.
Definitely not doing that. That's good a hard one. Pass.
Yeah, you got to be able to do some flips. We'll get some wires attached to you.
Good one, Mark. I like the choice here. I'm welcoming our new overlord, Mark, in the new era here on the dive. Let's keep it going.
I mean, you got to pass some reasonable policies first before you tighten the grip on the
Okay. You got to make the monkey dance first. Now Azale's going to be dancing for you.
Go with the populist. On the meta stuff, moving on from the bet, since we all agree that Azale will be doing something. The Rumble was really interesting because that was like the super hype pick coming in. It was probably the most talked about. It was terrorizing Solo Q as well. And it started to be played a lot, and it still is played a lot, but it felt like, especially on the last day and some of the later days, the priority on Rumble dropped from like being first pick, must first pick kind of thing to, you know, being taken a little bit later. And you know, even like C9, for example, was just like, yeah, we'll take the Udyr into it instead. I have a theory that it's because while the champion's raw power is insanely high, Rumble is not like the easiest champ in the world. Yeah, his clear is easy, and like you can generally press the buttons and kind of run at people, but to like really min-max him and like get your overheats and your alts and everything correctly, it's actually pretty difficult. He is a somewhat difficult champion. So I think it's something that the true potential might not be unlocked by a lot of junglers who are like, I picked him up 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how many are...
Here's my take on your take, which I have heard a decent amount of people come up with, and I have been spamming it. I know my solo queue, fans don't trust it. It's okay. That's fine. But I have been spamming it.
That one guy out there who said that.
You're in COVID. He's
like looking at the camera. He's like, oh, I know. My solo queue doesn't matter. I see you. They said it's a little post.
But I am willing to take the compliment from Mark because I literally... So Rumble Jungle is not a brand new thing, okay? There have been multiple years in the past where Rumble Jungle has popped its head up. It hasn't been nearly to this degree because it was not front and center as far as patch buffs or anything like that. But I play with Contracts. I play with Ando a lot. Both those guys pride themselves on their Rumble Jungles. I think it was 2018 was maybe the most recent one. Regardless, I never picked it up at that point during those other surges of Rumble Jungle. But now I had to jump into it because all the pro players spamming it. It was so big. My first three games, I just cruised to victories. So like if it's that hard, then you know maybe I'm a random jungle.
Go back to pro play, Kobe.
Or something. The only tricky thing is deciding on if you want to smart cast or not smart cast your ultimate. And I do recommend if you have not played Rumble before to have it not smart cast, so that you can get a feel for the range. But I quickly turned it to SmartCast, and it's just like, I know people sometimes complain, it's not that hard, right? Coming up and visualizing where ahead of time you're going to want it is the hard part. And finding those really good Rumble ultimates, that's definitely a skill. But once, if you have the brain power, I don't think the mechanics of it take too long to actually master. And then the rest of it is just like, okay, like you're oftentimes intentionally overheating in the jungle, and that's just mashing all your keys to intentionally overheat on the buff so that you percent max HP, just nail this buff and with the extra attack speed. So it hasn't been too hard. The first couple times I maybe mismanaged heat, like once or twice, you accidentally silence yourself when you want to ult or something like that. But it's actually really easy to get to the 50 heat threshold for the bonuses. And generally easy overall to use it. My actually take on it was that people, because it was so prominent in all of these prominent figures, like Rumble is busted. Everyone's like agreeing, hear, hear, Rumble busted, number one. Everyone just takes it too far. And sometimes you forget that the synergies of champions are still incredibly important. Yes, Rumble is super busted. He got a lot loaded into his kit. Now he clears like a monster in addition to his previous strengths. And some people have been overlooking the previous strengths and synergies, setting up a hard crowd control to keep people on the Rumble ultimate. So many times we've seen games where it's Rumble with like nobody else has hard CC. And so you're like, okay, I'm clearing pretty quick. But there's a lot of other champions that clear quickly right now. Rumble does have really good dueling power, but the biggest, coolest part about Rumble was always these like, oh shit, this Chinese team got Rumble Jarvan again. And we're coming up with all these cool names. And you have, you know, Rumble with other giant AoE hard CCs, and that just devastated a team. Yeah, so that's what I think is like, it should be super high priority, but you should not drop your main, you know, construct of your theory crafting on setting it up with the super strong synergies to actually get the most of it. And I think we're seeing teams kind of, you know, get into that nuance now rather than just like, oh my God, everybody said this is the most OP, we better first pick it type of deal.
So Jarvan 4 mid coming to a pro game near you soon.
Support, I think support right Jarvan is actually more likely
because
aside from jungle, the most recent Jarvans were support Jarvans. But I don't think it's like that specific example is super likely at all. I think the hard CC is coming in other forms that are a lot easier. You know, Leona, Nautilus, Galio, those types of things. Mm-hmm.
I think you can also put Rumble mid. I think Rumble's actually really good mid, right? Both in solo queue. I think it should work in pro. So, you know, that is the other option. I tend to think it's still a strong pick. I think it's like people are being very reactionary one way and now the other way, as far as like, oh, it's insane. Nah, it's trash. I do think that there was a number of pros who were pretty poor with the equalizers. Like it's not that hard to place. I agree with you, Kobe. You know, I've played a number of games with it myself.
It's the forethought, right?
Do you do it horizontally or along someone? You know, there was a number, I can't even remember the exact game, but it was a Rumble jungle against the Lucian. I think it was maybe against Mad Lions, I want to say, where it kept just like being put in a way where he could just like dash to the side instead of having to run back through it as they're trying to engage, and like cutting off the path that you're pushing them into. Things like that are more important. So I think it's still going to be in there, and I still think it's really strong.
Yeah, it's for sure really strong. I do think it'll be dropped below the like godlike. You always have to bin it on red, or you know, it gets insta first pick.
I'm predicting Morgana as they well. Get better at it, it goes back up in priority.
Morgana as well deserves to be, you know, name and lights as we kind of talked a lot of the stuff that we talked about in our last meta talk coming into it has actually come true. So how about we do it this way? Have there been any surprises? Because I think these common things have been talked to death. Morgana has really good clear. She can double clear.
EGG.
Raptors red.
Kiana and the Zed mid. Stuff. I think I think Zed has been good in solo queue and has actually been rising in priority in solo queue. But I wasn't sure that we would see it, right? And I'm not sure if anyone else will see it, or if it's more just like of a Chaz special. But those did surprise me, and that was pretty cool.
Do you have any, Mark? Because I have one as well from watching the just solo queue accounts from EUS. I'm hoping that Kiana gets in here. And we heard in some of the interviews afterwards too, where directly after his Kiana game, he was like, okay, yeah, you kind of, in a lot of matchups, have to go into it willing to sacrifice a lot of CS and try and play on your power spikes to get those kills. The ultimate is always going to be insane. And Kiana is one of those champions that has core tenets in her kit that are very valuable for any stage of league. Solo queue, pro play, doesn't matter. Clash, normal games. How's it on ARAM, Azale? You're our ARAM expert.
Kiana?
Yeah, because I'm like, the walls are not there. So maybe
you push from like the middle of the map to the side because it's so fat.
Okay.
But still not that good.
Okay.
I would, in terms of meta stuff, maybe I would say maybe Zoe was seen a little bit more than I initially thought she was. And I mean, like when the C9 games against it was annoying just being like, she's like roaming all over the map and tends to. If you're playing the control mages, she has some good matchups into some of them. So Tin Owens was an incredible Zoe. He was popping off really hard. And then a couple other people picked it up too. So it was a little bit more than I thought we were going to see of Zoe.
I like too that if Zoe's in the game, you can always throw
the
out
smite
that.
Steals.
You can always throw out that Hail Mary or that cautionary tale, and you could be like, well, they may be behind, but Zoe's Trouble Bubble could win them the game at some point. Oh. You know, you land a sneaky one on a carry. What were you going to say, though, Mark?
I thought you were going to say about the Baron Steals. There were two Zoe Baron Steals already, I think.
So, without and both with and without Summer Spellbook as well. One of them wasn't even with Summer Spellbook. You know, Paddlestar doing a decent amount of damage.
Oh, one thing I am a little bit curious about is, are we actually going to see some more of the kind of like expected ADCs? There was a fair bit of talk about Jinx and even Cog coming into the tournament. We got a couple Jinx games. We got one Cog game. It's been basically Engage only with like a couple Tahm Kench games in there, you know, alongside Varus, and that's a little bit different. But I'm interested to see if there will be any development with, you know, disengage supports, like if we get anything like enchanters alongside Cog or alongside Jinx. I think that's something I'm kind of curious about too.
For me, that actually hinges on the success of these top lane tanks, because we saw Cloud9 super successful back to back. You know, Fudge, Sion top lane. You know, Don Juan Kia is ready to put Khan back on some tanks. They'll be like, hell yeah. So, you know, there's definitely a possibility there, because if you're fighting front to back, you know, stuff like Jinx, stuff like Cog is going to also rise in priority.
All right. So, on to the Honda MVP section here. And for the Honda MVP today, we are going to take a Twitter question. This one comes from Rob at TBP Robinizer. Who is the best player not from a major region at the tournament so far? Who made an impression on you during the tournament?
There are so many.
Answer, but I'll let someone else go.
Go ahead, Mark. No, you're the overlord, okay?
I'll take the layup, Evie, from DFM. He's been someone who's been pretty consistently good for a little while now, actually. I think he's made a number of international tournaments in a row. And every time he just gets a little bit better, but he's been hyped up quite a bit now. And I think he looks pretty legit. And so he's probably the one that was the most impressive, just outright. But I also feel like he had gotten more hype than some of the other people that we'll probably talk about as well.
Mm-hmm. What you got, Azale?
So PCS, I guess, is not counted as a major region anymore officially, right? So I do think Doggo is actually really quite good. I think he impressed me. I think Holy Phoenix as well. To ADs that I thought played really, really well for their team. You know, they're two of like the highest farmers. I think they laned well. I think they team fought well largely. You know, in general, like I said earlier, I just think a lot of these guys have really impressive mechanics, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, I really like, especially Holy Phoenix, you know, willing to play these win lane, win game type of champs like Kalista and Samira and stuff. I was so freaking excited the first game that we got, and they triple ban him, and then he pulls out the Samira and pops off as well. So there are just so many individual players not from major regions that really impressed. I like that you actually call out, you know, Doggo for, because after the first game where he had this one where he just like stares down the Nautilus hook and gets hooked and, you know, they lose off bottom lane. I was like, oh shit, the sub is going to be, but he just popped off game after game after game after that. And was in a lot of the games, actually the most impressive player on that team, which is saying a lot since I have a pretty big bias towards Maple with all his history. So. Definitely agree there. I'm going to choose a Pentanet player because these guys, nobody gave them any sort of credit coming in, including myself. And Biopanther, I thought, was sick. Even when we were talking up this team and talking, we would mostly focus on Pabu because of his All-Stars experience, because of his wide champion pool, you know, because of the way a lot of their games with. I thought, you know, Bio stepped up really big for the team as well.
Yeah, I mentioned it as well with the Zoe, but I want to give a shout out to Tin Owens because I think they lost that game, and I think it was their first one against Mad Lions. But just like that was like a 1v9 Zoe performance.
Yeah.
He was so sick that game, and it sucks. I don't think they won that game, but it was just incredible to watch him like pop off. And I think afterwards, Kaiser in an interview was like, "Yeah, that was crazy. That was really scary."
I think it was also just a lot of fun watching the Pain games and seeing like all their fans popping off on Twitter and everything.
Rob's Day.
yeah, Rob's Day and all that stuff. Like the CV Low community is pretty insane. So it's definitely fun to see that grow. All right, we're going to talk about the Rumble stage. So we'll obviously be talking some about the group games, but we're going to be kind of looking forward towards the Rumble stage and the teams that qualified, the games that they played during the group stage. Dom1, RNG, Mad Lions, Cloud9, PSG, and Pentanet GG. Those are the six qualifiers.
And guess what? Let's get right into the meat of it then, because right after, this is still the same day that Dom1 is looking very, very mortal, very, very fallible as a team. And it feels like they are going to have to revert. It felt like, you know, some of the champ selects were getting out into a lot of new territory, and they didn't seem comfortable with it. And so that's why I'm like, I actually expect a big reversion for Dom1 to see their LCK style. And they even did it, you know, already in some of these group stage games. And yet we're still a bit even too slow, losing a lot of ground in the early game, you know, getting picked off in different places. Some of the team fights actually weren't even as clean as we expect from this team. Previously, everyone's like, Dom1, number one for sure. Maybe there's like a decent percentage that we're going for RNG. It was, you know, LPL, LCK, no brainer. Obviously, they're, you know, going to be top two regions. And yet, coming into this one, LPL, their group looked so much easier. You know, obviously, they also only had three teams. So it was more repeat stuff after you felt like you had gotten a good picture of it. And Dom1 looking way more open. I feel like the tournament feels way more open just overall.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was one of the people who was predicting Dom1 to probably take it. And I mean, tournaments are long. People look bad at certain parts and then get drastically better. We've seen that Worlds play-ins, and then those teams somehow make it out of groups, and then they're like winning best of fives and stuff. So that can always happen. But you know, like right now, RNG is playing better. Right now, they're the better team. Through this week and then the next week during the bracket stage, maybe we'll flip back to Dom1, but I think RNG is the new favorite after that. I know we talk about like the level of competition, and I don't want to, you know, put Pentanet down, but they were lacking the VCS, who was supposed to be the pool two seed for their group, and that would have made it much more competitive, I think. It would have been harder for Pentanet to get out, as well as maybe would have seen someone challenge RNG a little bit more because they just steamrolled their group. But with how we've seen the other major region teams struggle against their pool four teams, I think it's fair to say that RNG just looks the best. Even just saying like, okay, yeah, they don't have their pool two seed, but just look at their wins over the pool three and pool four ones, much more dominant. And I think that they play the meta the best. They have not really struggled on an individual level. Their team decision making has been really, really crisp, as well as just individual dominance. And they were doing it with, like, you know, with Xiaohu and everyone just like picking up new stuff along the way too.
Let me put on my NA hat and throw you a curveball then, Mark. Guess what? RNG didn't beat any pool one seeds, did they? Cloud9 did. Checkmate. 3-0. A boom. Lawyered. Best team. Okay, I'm taking off that cap now.
for RNG, I mean, it's tough. Like, RNG played the cleanest games. That's not close. But I also think that UOL regressed a lot. I think that you know, they were a lot weaker regionally and they looked a lot weaker internationally. So, you know, really you are in a group that is probably the weakest group that there's ever been internationally, I would say. So, you know, they did dominate the group. You can't, like, I can't take anything away from RNG, but I also, my opinion is not affected at all. Like, my pre-tournament feelings on RNG are not affected at all by them beating up on Pentanet and UOL. You know, I think Pentanet played above my expectations. I think UOL played below my expectations. And those were the only two teams in the group. And RNG is clearly heads and shoulders above, and they just kind of beat up on them. You know, when I look at the other two groups, they were just way more competitive. So the fact that MAD struggled more, the fact that Dom1 struggled more as the other pool one teams just makes sense to me. I think DFM looks better than Pentanet as well as UOL. Cloud9, I think, looks stronger as well than those other teams, right? You know, PSG clearly looked, I think, stronger. Even you mentioned Pain looking a lot more competitive and almost taking a game off MAD, right? So I just feel like the other groups, you know, were more competitive. And that's why, at least for me, like, my pre-tournament expectations aren't really that shaken. Dom1 did look a lot more vulnerable. but it is best of one. And they talked even in the interview about trying to experiment a little bit with some picks and find their style. And I do still feel pretty confident that Dom 1 is going to come out and look a lot more dominant in phase two once they have kind of like their established read on the meta, especially knowing that tanks may be coming back in, like Kobe was mentioning. You know, if they want to play that style, they're still a pretty incredible team.
Just real quick too, on the group, the being the weakest group ever. I think there's a lot of things that go into that. Yes, just as you mentioned, Vietnam pool two seed isn't there in it. That's already going to be a huge blow. But then also both the other teams had their regions had stuff to overcome to even just be here. Oceanic region, obviously, a lot of the players exported. And so that was a huge blow. That's why expectations were so low. And for Unicorns of Love, to your point of them looking worse, that's why coming into this, I was so sad that they lost Gadget. And then they had to go through this AD carry swap where, you know, going with trying to go with the French AD carry, having the language problems, and then bringing in Lodic, who's still in school. He's at this moment, like, working on his master's while he's playing in MSI. Yeah,
apparently he's doing his thesis, at this time.
His time is divided, okay? Plus, he was on a break from League because he was dedicating full-time to school previous to that. So it's these things that you had to overcome for these opponents, plus the fact that they don't even have the pool two team. I don't think, you know, anyone should be offended by that, but it is the fact of the matter, right? So
yeah, and I think to that point, like, that's why I wouldn't say RNG like flew up, in my opinion. You know, I don't think it changed at all heading into preseason or pre-tournament expectations. The real reason is because Damwon looked worse. And maybe we're skipping over group B a little bit here, but you know, as the what was the pre-tournament number one, like, you know, I don't even care really about Group A. Like, yeah, it was weird. RNG stomped it. Great. What happened with Dom 1 and why were they struggling really hard? They should have lost the game to, you know, DFM, who are good, but, like, they should have lost that game. Even their second game versus them was pretty scrappy for a portion of the time. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. You know, the fact they obviously lost to C9, I think, raises way more doubt in what they're up to. And like you're saying, you know, we best of ones, this has happened before with teams who struggle a little bit more during these portions and stuff like that. But they definitely look like they're struggling a little bit.
Yeah, I want to use specifically their first game versus DFM as the example of, you know, in LCK, you wouldn't get so worried even if they had a little deficit in the beginning of the game because you had so much faith in them being able to set up for the mid-game objectives and perform so well in these team fights. You know, Khan always on this tank, bring him down. And yet, in that game, they only won because DFM rushed it at the finish line. Yeah. Like that game, they had to have that opening of DFM rushing into the shockwave, into the AoE at the very end there, right over the last inhibitor turret. And it was just not this sense of control or this structure that you're used to thinking of when you're watching Dom 1 games and they're going by the books. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, is where a lot of people's faith in the team was shaken. Still think, you know, individual play looks pretty strong for them. They showed at multiple points within the group. They still very capable at setting Canyon up for a lot of jungle domination. There were still a lot of these early games where, you know, he steals away 4 Raptor camps in a row or something like that. Again, yeah, I do think they can have a return to form, but they've definitely shed that shell of invincibility that they kind of felt like they were coming into the tournament with,
for
just
sure,
because they dominated LCK so heavily.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I had some problems with their drafts. And draft and early game were the two like biggest focuses for me for Dom 1. You know, I think to speak about Cloud9 a bit, you know, you mentioned the near loss to DFM. The first game was competitive as well. And then kind of hit a point, you know, between Cloud9 and Dom 1. It hit a point where Fudge kind of got caught a couple times in the jungle. Some fights broke out. Things went bad. But Cloud9, I felt like pretty heavily outscaled in that first game. And had the game gone on a couple more minutes, it could have looked bad. And it kind of felt like that happened as well in the second game. But Cloud9 held on and kind of hit that critical mass where, you know, Tristana hits 4, 5, 6 items. You know, the game gets incredibly difficult to actually play out. you know, Victor has range. You know, a lot of these champions start to get a lot more difficult to play with kind of like shorter range over on the Dom 1 side, you know, playing with the Sylas, playing with the Kai'Sa, as opposed to Victor as well as the Tristana. And, you know, I do agree that there was obviously mistakes, and I'm not trying to like paint over that or overlook that. Just to me, because when I watched like the individual levels of play, it still felt really high. It felt more about, you know, like how they were drafting and what their focus was in game rather than something that they couldn't fix. Right. And that's kind of why I still have confidence in them, that they'll be able to adjust their approach and they'll be able to come in with a little bit of a different look, because it's not like these players haven't played aggressively in the past, right? Like this year, they were very slow in the LCK, but you know, in the past, they have had a more aggressive look when that was the meta. So I think we'll see some adjustment from them coming into the Rumble stage, and I'm kind of excited to see that. But I want to talk about Cloud9 a bit, if unless you
can I get a little one more thing onto Dom1. I just want to make a callback to when we, our previous episode coming into MSI, I also said, because Koma is the coach, look out for testing in group stages. They signed Koma to this team. They also got Pumendu, and they did that. Okay. They definitely dropped a bit more and had a few more weaknesses than I was expecting. But Koma has a history of this, so it's not completely out of the realm, you know, of expectation. Now,
Barrel's little struggle busting was all that unique picks of Nautilus. Sorry, go ahead.
No, get in. What do you?
No,
think?
That was it. I was gonna say that like some of these things are like, yeah, huge. You know, I don't think it's all draft stuff. I think a lot of the players underperforms to their own expectations a little bit too. Showmaker getting caught out of position, trying to take fights, not knowing where people were, or like going too far and just getting blown up. Happened quite a few times too. So, I think that they can improve. I mean, speaking of C9, going through the first half of the round robin, their players are making a lot of individual mistakes, which went away on, you know, today to be able to snag that 3-0 and get out of the group. So obviously individual play can rise and fall over very short periods as well.
There are two things that I wanted coming into today. One, obviously, Blabber, clean up the misclicks, you know, the stopwatch thing. That's like he either had the wrong key binding or fat fingered or whatever. Clean up the little things that you could fix in practice tool, like the spots for double farming camps. Clean up the decisions like this. Two things, as I said. The fourth, second thing that I... Blabber was one of the things. Blabber was one of the things, okay? That was all one thing. The second thing, I just
kept putting
up my fingers for it. The second thing is that I wanted to see Fudge have a dominant lane phase. Fudge have a dominant topside. And guess what? He did. Lee Sin pick, baby. It was like I won two things in one fell swoop. You know, we got Lee Sin smashing it. And in the hands of Fudge. Afterwards, some people were trying to make it sound like, oh, like he smashed him in lane phase. You know, Khan was like, you know, lose. That's not true. Khan was still pushing in on Jace as you're supposed to do. He was still mining turret plates by hand. But it was more with the plays later that Fudge made such a big impact, as well as on the ganks. You know, set up for the ganks, you know, Blabber with the first flash one in, being able to get that kill, he lands the Q, everything like that. So I got exactly what I was looking for from Cloud9 today. I was streaming the other day and everyone kept on coming in. Like, how do you feel with all these player interviews about everyone flaming, you know, Cloud9? You think they're going to get out? Are you on Copium? Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff, you know, it was kind of overwhelming wave. And so I was definitely... relieved, I guess, to see some of that resurgence from them, you know, so quickly. I feel like, because there have been a lot of international tournaments in the past where the North American representative, you know, all have honestly similar thoughts of, you know, ways that they can clean it up or improve or whatever, and then it doesn't happen in time. How many times have we been in the same situation and yet we're sweating bullets to the end and then we lose a tiebreaker or something like that? You know,
every time.
Yeah, I totally agree, because after the first 3 days, you know, the postgame threads are filled with like, Blabber's their MVP, NA must suck, and it's like, no, he's underperforming, you know, whether just having a bad set of games or pressure, whatever, you know, like we can't really say on the outside, but like the extrapolation of that went so far to attacking like C9 and like how good they were. It was insane.
Yeah, especially, I just one tiny little interjection here, especially it was funny seeing people use the Scuttle Crab example while saying the argument that Blaber's looking bad now because he's against better competition. I'm like, what the hell? Are you telling the MSI Scuttle Crab is more alluring than the North American Scuttle Crab? You shut your mouth. The North American Scuttle Crab is just as alluring, okay? That's the competition did not make him do that.
The other thing that was great was the unification of junglers that came together over that, where they're like, you know, the joke.
Everyone's like raising their hand, I've done it.
You wouldn't get it. You know, that thing, like, that play and, you know, Yanko's popping off so hard, like, no one say jungle dip.
against that, Canyon, yeah.
Yeah. It was so funny to see that. It was very unifying on the junglers coming together and then just everyone just memeing NA. It was insane to be like the minor regions were throwing like hella shade. Like, you know, anyone can get out of Group C except C9. Like, Hanabi, really? Really? That hard? Like, so, I don't know, sweet vindication a little bit to be like, listen, we're North America. I'm not going to like say we don't have our problems and our struggles, but like the degree that it got to was like, this is insane how trash people just assume that NA is.
I mean, I think it's honestly just like, it's just engagement baiting at a certain point. It's just one of those things that if you go to www.twitter.com and you type in NA minor region lol, you're going to get some likes and some retweets. And I think it's like, it's not a lot more than that at a certain point where, I mean, people want to make these like false equivalencies and stuff. I mean, like Kobe said, talking about the Scuttle Crab play as like justification that the MVP in LCS is trash and therefore the LCS is trash and all this sort of stuff. It's like, unless you're trying to make the argument here that MSI junglers have the ability to mind control their opponents into inting at the Scuttle Crab, like that's not an example that really holds any water, you know. And so it's definitely vindicating. It feels good that they had a really strong performance in what was, you know, the toughest group by far, right? On the second set of games, right? I'm not going to defend the first set of games. There were some really poor performances. Blaber was awful. You know, they flew some of his stats. I can't remember if it was when you're casting or the first set, but it was like in NA at whatever, 10 or 15, something like that. You know, he was like plus 400. And then at MSI in the first three games, he was like negative 950 or 980 or something like that. Like his early games had been awful, right? And it was bad play. It was maybe a bad read. You know, he did get interviewed and he talked about how he felt like the mistake was going for picks that can't fight early, that can't farm fast. You know, like the Kindred, I think, is mostly what he was talking about. Kindred has great scaling, but then he was up against a Morgana. He got absolutely put so far behind, he just couldn't keep any pace in the jungle. So, you know, he felt that it was mostly off of the read, or at least that's what he kind of put forth in the interview. I don't think his day today was perfect. There was still some silly stuff. The invade on the Morgana death was a little bit careless. There was, I mean, The Wildcats game, I guess it was at the end, like I care less about because it was like everything was already decided. And so it was they had 21 kills on just Cloud9 side at 21 minutes. But there was some sloppy stuff around Scuttles there too.
Specifically for the Morgana invade, this is actually two times now because I like talking about specific plays and specific strategies here as examples. There have been two times. I don't remember the exact what the other team was. But I'm sure that you'll also remember it was a split map and the team defended instead of agreeing to the split map, right? When you late invade on your opponent's other side in an attempt to split top versus bottom, the other side has the choice to traverse over and try and fight you off off that side. And you can do that if you have the stronger mid and bottom, if you're trying to chase them off blue in the case that, you know, Blaber was the one getting chased off here, you can do that if you have the stronger lane priority. And it just, that is two times of examples from these group stage games where that happened. So, and I'm glad that one of them was directly to Cloud9 because I was like, I thought the first one should have been an eye opener. Hey, everybody's not going to just handshake on your deal that you've decided this is a split map here and be happy with it. If they have pushing lanes, they can come and try and punish you for it. So that thing should be an eye opener and should reinforce the thing that people have been parroting all season long of how important it is to play for jungle camps. Just because Hecarim got sent to the whatever glue factory. Or whatever the memes people are trying to, you know, Hecarim got screwed, right? Just because of that doesn't mean everything else about the jungle doesn't remain the same. The core tenets of the jungle are all the same. We haven't had these structural level changes to the jungle yet that they're teasing for next season. Just because the champions are different, you still have to focus on that. Dom1 do it really well. Mad Lions actually do it really well with El Yoya. We haven't gotten to start talking about Mad Lions, but we'll probably start talking about them next. And I think that's one of the things that Cloud9 need to refocus on. And it seems like today was one of those refocusing points, part of the reason why they had stumbled so much in the first early parts of the game. You know, Sven, you could tell, like, he was frustrated with Blabber, with their jungle, you know, on the grasp on the meta, how to play around it, all these types of things. I think that was causing Cloud9 a lot of these problems in their scrims and in the stage games. And by the way, they've been having terrible scrims for most of the time at MSI, which I think also leads in part to a lot of these interviews where you guys are talking about this super catchy, like flame, you know, titles where people are like, Cloud9 sucks ass. They're not getting out. You know, if you 6-0 them in scrims or something, you know, maybe you say that too, right? Yeah. But I think those, you know, those things obviously have been to some degree, you know, corrected as we saw today.
I think the other thing too with that jungle invade that you were talking about was the fact that he actually didn't fall behind on that because Steel didn't play it like aggressively enough, I guess, mm-hmm. you would say, afterwards. He kind of just let him go back and farm his whole jungle, end up on bot side and get bot scuttle crab.
Where Freak tried to call it a free death. Huh.
Yeah. I mean, he ended up way ahead of Steel that entire game off of that initial kill because, yeah, it's like, yeah, you stopped the split map, but you also abandoned a whole quadrant to run across the map, and now you're clearing again. And I think it just shows that, like, when you do punish someone and catch them out in the jungle, there's more work that has to be done. You can't just, like, let your foot off the gas, and I think that's what Steel did there. And Blabber did a good job recovering. And I think overall, like, Cloud9 has legitimate strengths, too. Like, Sven and Vulcan have been really good the entire time. Even when they were losing, they were usually the best ones performing. And Perks has been really good. He's just been on half of his games on picks that don't have that much agency. 2 Victor games, 1 Orianna game, and 2 of their losses were on those. And he kind of just had to sit mid and, like, watch the team kind of fall apart. This Victor game, again, he's getting dove all the time. This was against a dumb one. And he was able to actually, like, turn these plays around because Blabber was actually even. So when they come to gank him, he flashes forward, has the really nice placement of the gravity field to get the double stun, to get the double kill and stuff like that. Like, that was all so sick. And then when he has agency, Perks has absolutely clapped people. The Triss game, the Yone game, the Lucian game, all 3 were, like, just hard smurf games. So, you know, mm-hmm. I think C9's not, like... Who knows exactly where they're going to land, because they could revert a little bit too to go more to those initial games and struggle still. I don't want to pretend like they're in the clear now. Every day is going to be like this 3-0 day. They'll probably in some drafts and stuff too again or something, or have some bad plays. But, you know, I think they're clearly much better than what was shown in their first 3 games. And, you know, this was the kind of the Cloud9 we were waiting for when we were getting a little excited about them in NA.
Yeah, I would push back a little bit on the, like, Perks only look bad because of the, like, passive picks, because I actually thought his first Orianna game and Victor were awful. I think from, like, where he was positioning himself to, you know, missing basically every shockwave, like, he was completely absent in those first 2 games. So I think he deserves some heat for that. You know, Blabber obviously got a lot of criticism, and I think rightfully so. I think Blabber was awful in his first couple of games there. I think Perks, you know, was amazing on the Tristana game, but I thought his first 2 were like, he was really underperforming. You know, the bot lane, as he pointed out, I think was great. I'd also say, you know, it's like, not only has Perks had that rebound where he just looked incredible today, but also Fudge, I think, deserves a lot of credit. I think Fudge overall has been very good. You know, even in the losing games, he's had some bright spots, some really nice moments and stuff. Like, is he the best top laner here? No, I don't think so, right? My opinion has not changed in that way. But the steady improvement of Fudge from the beginning of the year to now has really, really impressed me, right? Like, you know, it went from, this guy is the worst piece of crap top laner in the league, like, he's going to be the reason you lose every time, to, like, maybe he's, like, going to lose, but not that bad. and oh, maybe he can carry some games. Ah, like he didn't get, like Alfari couldn't even get ahead of him. And now like he had a game where he legitimately, you know, really, really was a big reason that they won against Khan, who was, who most people were pointing to as the best top laner in the tournament. So, you know, is he better than him? No, but he has improved leaps and bounds. And it's just great to see that he has had confidence on the international stage, right? To be able to bust out the Lee Sin, to play aggressively, to not be scared as the youngest player in the LCS. That to me gives me a lot of hope and a lot of confidence for this guy's career and for the rest of the tournament from him. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic about Cloud9. I don't think that they're tournament favorites. I don't think anyone's, you know, going to try to sell you that bridge. But I do think that, you know, they have a legitimate shot to make to the knockout stage and be competitive in the best of five. And, you know, on the best day, who knows what happens, right? Like, no one was going to bet on TL to be IG either.
How much for that bridge? How expensive is that bridge? You lower the price enough.
What was Brooks' buyout? $12 million?
You lower the price
enough. I'll do it for 11.
I'll just buy that sucker. For me, one of the big points and why it was one of the things I was looking for coming into the day, for the two things, remember there were only two, Labber.
The two things.
Was that he did it on Lee Sin. And some of these plays later on in the game, you have to make big plays. You have to get in there with a safeguard. There was one he Q, then safeguard, ward hops over to a kick on the carry back through the rest of the team. You have to make those value plays on Lee Sin. It's not the same as playing Sion, where you can provide a ton of value by ramming your head into people and putting on your shield and even dying.
Walking forward.
Then you die, you get back up, you walk forward again. Really great job there. Really way to get out there and give it your all. I thought that was really important. Plus, I really liked when you guys were talking about perks. It's actually Fudge who is doing the missing pings, which is the hype up. It's the equivalent of like, you know, a lot of times in Valorant, it's way more common because your teammates will die and you'll be the last person and everyone's yelling and hyping you up when you're about to clutch something. But League of Legends, when your team spams question mark pings on you after you do a good play, to me, that is like, in solo queue, that happens to you, you're like $10 million. Like, oh yeah, what happened there, idiots? Just got styled on.
That's the real tank mechanics. You talk about Sion mechanics, that's the mechanics right there. You know, he's side laning, he's just watching perks, question mark pinging the whole game.
I get a lot of question mark pings, but it's usually when I die in my own jungle to an invade.
Context is everything with question mark pings. It could be they're hyping you up, five spam pings
flexible.
In a row.
Very it's flexible. Either...
Exactly. Let's move on to Mad Lions, though. Because we went pretty juicy on Dom 1. We went pretty juicy on Cloud 9. I'm actually really, really hyped now to see how this team performs in the Rumble stage. Because coming into this, the thing I was most confident about for Mad Lions was their team fighting execution. And they had some interviews in some of these games after the group stage games where they're like, oh, yeah, you know, we're not respecting them. But there were errors. There were kind of uncharacteristic errors that I was not expecting to see from this team coming in. Yes, they comfortably got through. There was never, you know, any real panic for, you know, for EU fans. You know, for this group stage, at least for the team. I would say one of the biggest bonuses and surprises for the team is how well Karzy was playing and how much more confidently and better, because that was one of the few things that even EU fans would couch against, was like, okay, but our bottom lane's a little inconsistent. Like Kaiser, he's going to dominate. Karzy, we're a little bit more, you know, can definitely have some off games. Might not be the biggest carry all the time. And he absolutely popped off, and that also allowed people to just throw praise all over Kaiser. I was like, Kaiser's Nautilus game, especially that was casting, just engage after engage after engage, setting up so much for his team. So I'm super excited to see this squad and how far they can go, especially in the Rebel stage, because last year at Worlds it was the same bottom lane. They definitely have a lot to prove. Humanoid, I think, perform extremely well individually as well. And we've already kind of slightly touched on how well they play with El Yoya and have that jungle focus for the meta as well as the team fight focus for the meta. I feel like their heads are in the correct space for this. So I think they're in a good place to kind of have the small adaptations as the meta evolves in Rumble stage.
Yeah, and I think talking a little bit about like pre-tournament expectations and stuff, after the last episode of the Dive, and I was like, you know, people were putting PSG above them. A number of people did, not just Kobe, like a number of analysts.
I didn't put them above them. I said they could contest them because you guys said they were for sure number one.
Right, but other people did put them like legitimately above them. Yeah, you question mark pinged them.
And, yeah, exactly.
Other people went in there and flamed them. And it wasn't just like, you know, it was a general community sentiment, it seemed like, because after in the thread afterwards, you know, I was like, what is the EU fan perception? Because I was a little disconnected. And I was surprised to see how negative in a lot of ways people were around Mad Lions, because they were saying like, yeah, you know, we'll definitely, we should get out. And then after that, we'll be happy to like make quarters and lose gracefully. But I wouldn't even be surprised if we lost in the Rumble stage. And I was surprised to hear that like, you know, people were being like, oh, remember, you know, G2 vacation days, like it could be like that. Who knows? Because this is the worst team we've sent in a while. I've seen that. I was like, are people really that negative? Like, EU as a region is so much better now than it was in those days and stuff.
If you send G2 every year and then you don't send G2 and you're like, ah, well, this is the worst thing we've sent in a while. It's not G2.
I'm down with a come down, but being like, oh, we'll be lucky to like, you know, we'll be happy if we get out. Like, you know, like Mad Lions is going to get out of the Rumble stage. I mean, maybe I'm spoiling predictions here. We'll do that later. But like, I was surprised to see people so heavily doubting them, just like the general community, because they showed up pretty well, I'd say, in the Rumble stage, all things considered. Like, yeah, they had some iffy games where they, like, threw leads, but they were really consistent about building leads. And then the games where they did fall behind, they also came back in those games. And I think there's a lot of variation that goes on in the best-of-one games. And the fact that they were able to weather most of that pretty well, and, like, they have a lot of things that they can still improve on. I'm still saying Damwon and, you know, RNG are more favored than them. But I was just really surprised to see how much doubt there was in that first Dive thread that went up when I asked, like, what do EU fans think? And so, again, I think for the Mad Lions players, this probably feels really good, this thing. I know that there were some interviews where they were a little, like, after some of those games where they threw a little bit but still won, they were like, but I think overall they had a pretty good showing.
I feel like I'm being set up to be the villain here. You guys are going so positive on
Mad Lions. I'm giving my honest thoughts.
Just do the pose. Azale, try on the pose. Try on the pose.
I just think that, like, so I think they did fine. You know, I never doubted that they were going to get out, right? I had them as number one. They finished number one. I think that's all great. You know, I'm with you that I think I'd be predicting them to make it to the knockout stage. I do think we'd be remiss to not talk about some of the like very clear weaknesses, right? Like they had not only did they drop a game, they were really close in a number of other games to losing, right? Including like the Pentanet game, or sorry, not Pentanet, Pain Gaming, excuse me, PGG.
Backdoor game.
You know, the backdoor where like there was a mistimed Jinx ult that would have got them the win. You know, there was a couple little things that like they were like a hair's breadth away from losing. To a team that they're, you know, massively favored over, had some other competitive games as well, right? Where there was very close. And to me, like, that is not inherently a problem that it was close games. It was more that their mid game throughout the event, I think, was abysmal, right? Like, I think their team fighting is great. Big thumbs up there. Early game was great. Big thumbs up there. I think they had a good meta read. I think they played well around El Yoya. There's lots of positives, right? You know, I'm not trying to like jump on the hater bandwagon here or anything like that, because I think that there's a lot of positives there. But I think we would be remiss to not point out like the glaring weakness that I felt like everyone saw, which was their mid game. Their mid game was this like black hole where they would get ahead and then they would do some troll stuff or not necessarily be playing well on the map and fall behind, right? Like, I want to say, which was the game? Was it against the Wildcats, I think? Their first game against the Wildcats, for example, they got multiple Barons, and they were like going negative in gold during the Barons because they were not really matching side lanes well. It was the same problem when they played against Pain Gaming in the game that they almost lost there, when they were actually, you know, playing against Robo, was playing on the Camille, and they were kind of refusing to match side lanes. You know, they were struggling in the mid game, right? And so to me, like, that was a big weakness. If they can clean that up, I think they're going to look actually really good, right? And that's my big question is, this was your glaring weakness. It was a big problem, but it's so obvious to me. It's so obvious to the team too. So if they can actually improve on that, I think they can challenge these top teams. And I think that they can really surprise people. But I also think if that doesn't get better, you don't get to throw away the mid game against RNG or Dom1 or you know, some of these teams and expect to actually win, right? And so that's kind of my takeaway, is that, like, overall very positive, lots of really good things for them, but the weaknesses were extremely obvious and pretty consistent throughout almost all their games.
And that's that what the, I
oh, go ahead,
Mark. Okay, we both did the exact same thing. Okay, I just want to say that's what I was mentioning when I'm talking about their interviews that they're giving afterwards, where they're talking about a lot of these instances and they're doing the laughing it off or brushing it off. We didn't respect them, that sort of thing. Those always come with caution for me, because if you let yourself get into that pattern or that mentality, some teams can pull themselves out of it. Some teams cannot. And some of the uncharacteristic mistakes that I mentioned were actually in team fights. Their team fights were not universally good. There were several of them where they did have these ones where someone is far mispositioned over to the wrong side. And so that person gets jumped on and they're at too big of a deficit within the team fight to salvage it. And yet then they flood in. And a lot of those times were against Wildcats, and the Wildcats did a very good job of jumping on those players and on those openings, even sometimes in disadvantaged numbers to get those victories. So those are some of the things I was cautioning against and alluding to for the beginning, because coming into it, I was like, yeah, that is one of their biggest strengths is has been their team fighting. But even in that and some of the execution, and it does have to do with the timing on setting up for some of these, particularly. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think it was Bwipo at the end of the day when they qualified through, you know, he said they limped through, I think he said. So, like, it's yeah. I think it's a pretty shared opinion that they have.
Bwipo seemed very negative on Madden. Yeah, he was every player.
it was probably a little bit of that, like, man, if I was out there, I'd be doing way better than this guy. I bet he had a little bit of that going on with him.
I could play jungle, I could play top, I could play mid lane.
Yeah. Well, it's just but like, yeah, I mean, like,
yeah, they couldn't drag a compliment out of him on the analyst desk. I was just kind of cracking up listening.
Yeah.
I was like, why do you hate this team?
I don't know. It's just like what people seem to do from Europe about them. I don't know. But I think they're better than, I mean, they have those issues like you talked about. The mid game obviously needs to get cleaned up. The one game they did lose, though, I do give them a little bit of, you know, like a bit of a pass for it, because it was a weird draft where they have the Zoe Olaf, and afterwards in the interview they were saying, like, we're not really practice with that, and we don't really want to play that. And I think it was a situation where they had a lead that game, they threw it at like some Baron bait attempt thing that they were doing that they just went too hard on. And I think that they were just uncomfortable with that draft. And so, you know, that's not to say everyone has bad drafts and they lose games. You can't excuse everyone's game losses when they have a bad draft, but I think that was something where it's like, okay, let's just not pick Olaf with Zoe ever again, probably. It's a pretty easy takeaway. And so I think the cleaning up the mid game is a big issue. It's not something that you just do easily, like, don't pick Zoe this. You know, that's an easy fix. This is a hard one. But I think that they have, like, strong strengths to offset that, at least. And when you said the consistent thing, it's like a different problem than C9 had, where it's like, okay, they just didn't show up some days and played outright terrible. Versus, we consistently get leads, we consistently make really good plays. We also frequently throw those, but then we also recover. So, like, in that sense, I actually think that it's a good problem to have, that it's a consistent problem, and you're not just trying to put out fires everywhere every day. It's a different thing.
They had a lot of strengths, right? Like, they the good outweighed the bad to me by far. Like, I'm not super negative on this team. Like, I'm surprised as well. I didn't realize, you know, your interaction with the EU fans would kind of had them that negative on the team. When I had asked on Twitter, at least it was like today or yesterday or something, it felt like people were a bit more positive and the expectations were rising. People were basically saying, they must beat NA. That was like the number one response of like, what do you want from LEC, from Mad Lions as an LEC fan? It's like, have to beat NA. And then, you know, at least semifinals and like, have a competitive series seem to be the kind of common consensus, which I think that's, you know, if you're expecting to go against RNG and Dom1, those are good expectations to have.
Yeah. I don't, to kind of wrap up our Rumble stage expectations, what maybe was the biggest shift, if any, in your pre-group stage kind of rankings and expectations of these teams? Because for me, like, the big standout shifts are maybe Dom1 a bit down. RNG doesn't really move at all because there's not a lot of data there. So that one's kind of left untouched. I think PSG is a really interesting one, because, well, first of all, they talked a lot of shit about Cloud9, so I'm really ready for this rematch. But do you feel, because I don't feel like there were any big, like, massive, you know, paradigm shifting moves from group stage, all things considered.
Pentanet.
Even though there were a lot of these upsets, right? And even if you say Pentanet, Mark, you're probably not going to move them above any of these other teams that we mentioned. You're probably expecting them to be at the bottom of Rumble stage. It's great that they got in, and that is over expectations, but I'm pretty sure you're not putting them above any of the other teams.
With the general point of, like, I think everyone probably still has LPL SCK number one, number two. And, at least I had Cloud9 and MAD as 3-4. Right. And that really hasn't changed. I would say PSG maybe went up for me because, like, while I didn't think they were weak, I was still unsure how their regional success would translate because it never felt like they were challenged. And it's always hard when you're watching, some of these regions and a team just slams everyone. And it feels like they're not challenged. They're not getting, like, any competition. So, of course, they win, right, is kind of how it starts to feel. And, you know, you're watching mistakes, and you're like, well, none of this stuff gets punished. Like, you know, would another team punish it? Those are the questions that can be difficult to answer. And from that lens, I think PSG did go up in my mind because they showed that they actually can be, you know, quite competitive. I think they were quite competitive, in the second game with MAD, you know, that was a pretty good game. Obviously, they started out really bad with that first game, and I think that was like the Hecarim game and stuff, and it just went all bad. They got absolutely blasted by MAD. That was the most dominant game of that group. But after that, PSG really did start to look quite good. I think that, you know, they can be competitive, and I would say that they should be considered, like, in the group of kind of like Cloud9 and MAD and them as well, of, like, challenging for one of these potential knockout spots. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if they could steal away one of those spots.
So you moved them up to where I had them. So that's why I didn't have them moving much.
I
agree.
That's actually fair. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I thought that they would... I mean, they did still get 2-0 by Mad Lion, and I thought Mad Lions were going to be better. But, like,
yeah, they were better.
At the very least, I think they showed that they were able to challenge them in that second game. The first game felt really bad, but, you know, Nidalee set mid, kind of like it was a weird draft in the meta. And I think after that, they kind of moved away from that. And they still seem to have a little bit more uniqueness, like the Azir and stuff like that. So we'll have to see where they go against even stronger competition now. But I do like, you know, we talked about Doggo, Maple. I think Hanabi has been all right as well, playing a little bit more aggressive style things like the Jace games. Like, overall, I think they have a number of pretty good players that can get leads and not get trounced when they go up against, you know, like the Khans and Xiaohu's and stuff like that.
I wanted to focus specifically on Hanabi because... he was the one with the eye-catching headliner for the interview about any team but Cloud9 going to be able to move on from the group stage. And I actually, pre that quote, had a decent amount of notes on individual mistakes that he has made so far in the group stage for this team. So coming into it, for me, I was like, oh, wow. So that's... he's going to have a lot to hold up to then as we get to the Rumble stage. And he's going to have to actually put up here because already coming into it, we know looking at their play in the PCS that oftentimes he is going to be weak side and not a lot of resources and attention. And yeah, it is going to be a lot about the mid jungle, especially with subbing out their bottom lane and bringing in Doggo and having a sub AD carry. But I think there were several times where he mismanages minion waves and also does not respect opponent jungle presence. So I am super looking forward to all of those matchups now that we are having some more spice added to it. Anytime we get extra added incentive, I'm all about it.
I'd say for them that scared me the most was actually Kai Wing. He had some really sus plays that I was just head scratching at, especially against like the Mad Lions games, which are some of the most important ones. Like, you know, you have Hanabi and Maple making a play on like one half of the fight, and then just for no reason on Leona, he just eased into three
people. Oh man, that one play. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the big turning points of that game. I was just like, what are you doing, Kai Wing? You're winning a 2v2. He had an ultimate to kind of zone the three people from collapsing on his three people, and then he actually went into it. And I was like, I don't know. He's got to clean up a little bit. I think he was actually more since you started throwing some shit at Hanabi, I was like, yeah, let me in there. Let me throw some shit.
No, that was a really good one because that was definitely a team comm split. And I remember specifically too because the camera is up on, oh my God, they just got this great pick and they're just running through the back line and they get this big win. And then in the replay, it's like, what went down here? Why is Leona in there? Even the casters were like, I think Leona was like buying them time, you know, zoning. And you look at the replay and they're like, he did not have to go in at all there. He hit the max range Leona ultimate. And at that point, you're like, oh, this is the split point where you like look back over your shoulder and you're like, boys, you behind me? Or are we in this way? Because I got him, right? I hit the ult. I got him. We're going in. But there was no look over the shoulder there. No, nothing in the comms of they're like, we're out this way. We got the pick. You know, in the jungle, we actually killed off, I think it was a solo laner even that they got the pick.
Yeah,
off.
I think it was humanoid.
Yeah, it was big pick. And then you just see on the other half, he's like, Zenith played, and you're like, no! And Mad Lions, get a counter kill there, and then it doesn't reward them with any objective because, they lose out on that pressure. So that was definitely an individual instance. In those two, I also put a lot of emphasis on communication. But that has to do with, people will chalk that up to team fight awareness. You know, a lot of teams, you don't want to have to use comms space for stuff like that sometimes. And that's, that's an instance of on stage, tunnel vision and it not being corrected with, a call or whatever. Get in there, Azale. What you got? PSG.
Well, I kind of give my opinions already. I think that they're like their carries are very good mechanically. I think that Maple and Doggo are really strong mechanical players. Especially like looking some of the games, they had some issues as far as, I mean, I think draft was a big issue. I was kind of like had it mixed up in my head where I was thinking it was Hecarim game, but it was like what Mark said, it was that Nidalee set game. I think that didn't really work. When I've watched them, in the PCS, it felt like sometimes, they don't do the due diligence on their invades and on some of these plays that they want to make that I think they may be punished for. It felt like at times, they were very confident to like move in aggressively, almost like some of their opponents were kind of like over-respecting them. So I think that's something that can catch you when you're playing against better teams, when you're so dominant in your region. It's almost like this aura of invincibility you mentioned for Damwon. I feel like they have that in the PCS where teams don't necessarily challenge them on certain plays, which maybe they shouldn't be able to get away with. So I think that's something that we may see them struggle with in the next stage. I want to talk about Pentanet a bit, though. Obviously, we've kind of like brushed over them and touched on them a little bit. But, this was like a pretty miraculous result, right? Three-team group aside, the fact that UOL didn't play as well as they did last year aside, they literally lost their league. Most of, or at least their perceived best players, I'll put it that way, got imported over to the LCS, right? They're no longer even considered imports, so it's like they all joined a lot of teams. Fudge himself is on one of the teams, obviously, like Roma, FBI, Destiny, etc. Like a lot of these guys all left the league. They lost a lot of their sponsors. They lost a lot of their core teams that they were in there, and they rebuilt. And the fact that they were able to have a result that they never had, yes, there are extra circumstances. Yes, there are some things that you have to take in consideration there. But I thought it was a pretty incredible performance. And besides that, they were just so fun to watch. Like, from the trash talk, the unicorns of loss, to the coach with the finger guns and the glasses, like every time he's out there, they had some swag. They had some style. The Twitter game was on point. They were like memeing it up. They were having some fun, and they were playing with confidence, right? And like when you see their cameras, it always looked like they were having fun with it. They were laughing even when they were losing. You know, which I know sometimes people are like, it means you don't care. No, I mean, it's about keeping a good attitude, right? So you can stay upbeat and stay actually positive about the game. So, you know, I enjoyed watching them a lot. I enjoyed seeing the story and the success with, you know, a lot of the cool picks coming out with a lot of the personality that they were shown. So, you know, I just had actually a blast watching them. You know, if you look at that group, like originally it was like, this group is going to be pretty terrible. RNG is just going to kind of stomp anyone. And then it's like, who cares? You know, you ignore the RNG games, and then you just kind of pretend that it's like a best of five between UOL and Pentanet, and it was actually kind of a banger group. Like, I actually really enjoyed that best of five.
I had a lot of
fun watching that. So I'm really happy for them. I'm really happy for a lot of our like Australian friends and casters and people who either still work in the LCO or used to work in OPL or, you know, were involved in the teams. Like, obviously there's so many OS people involved in esports, you know, from Spawn and Atlas and Rusty and Raz used to be over there and Frost was over there. Like, so many people have actually come through the OPL, and it's affected a lot of people. So it's just been cool to see them have that success and kind of like how fun and how excited the region has been.
Yeah, the boys.
a couple of things. They also directly credited the fun and positive atmosphere as giving them the ability to reset and go into basically the game five of their best of five with Unicorns of Love and throw down, you know, with some of these picks, like the Zed and everything. And they're memeing on it the entire time, but they also... Because a lot of people, you know, follow Pabu at least on Twitter, because the All-Stars interaction gave him a lot of you know, followers, and he has a pretty big voice, and so he's very outspoken. And he's been talking about the hate after the very beginning, the opening, and some of the losses and misplays that he had, directly getting all of these super negative messages and having to even you know, stop using. You know, or stop looking at replies from people you don't follow, and trying to like cut down and pare down on some of the social interactions, that type of stuff, especially when you are the sole representative of a region, you have to have a galvanizing team atmosphere to be able to deal with that stuff a lot of the time. And so to the point of like how much fun these guys are having and the good attitudes, and they're dancing, they're joking, they're creating meme templates for us on stage, bringing up the whiteboard and drawing this stuff, is just so, so positive just for the entire league, for the entire scene, for all of, you know, League of Legends esports is, you know, is a very good look, I would say, because there can be a lot of negativity sometimes that swamps you know, through these things. You know, of course, it also had a crazy happy ending, which changes everything. You know, they actually did win and promote, and so now I bet all the people, you know, that were originally flaming him are like, my bad guy, you know, sorry about that, forget about the earlier message, I never doubted you. Damn, I forgot what the other thing, because I just started getting so happy remembering all.
You were
going to
talk about their
them.
Drafts and how much you like their champions, and like the Samir still coming out, and the Urgot tops, all the AD carries mid that they're throwing around, all the AD assassins. You know, also got the Karthus coming out still, the Fiddlesticks. They're busting out tons of cool stuff. That's what you're going to say, that you love the drafts because they keep it interesting in game too and out of game.
There was something else.
And no, that was it.
It was better than that, but I don't remember what it was. So,
yo, flame his point. He's trying to save you here.
I did like a lot of the minor region interviews too. I mean, like a lot of stuff was just super fun. Like Holy Phoenix had a great interview. He was an OG too, like made Worlds all the way back in 2014. And mm-hmm. I don't know, there was a lot of really good personalities out of people. The Unicorns of Love had some good ones. I think after they lost to the Zed mid, you know, I think it was No Man's interview where he was like, who the F does that? Who picks Zed blind after never playing it?
It's pretty funny.
Jazz does. That's who. Welcome to Jazz Town.
Even if Kobe does not agree with you, I actually agree with you. I think all the Rider champions
disagree with.
Even if Kobe hates your guts, I respect you, Mark. All the different champions that they picked, I think, were a lot of fun. Right? Pabu was pretty well known. We talked last week when we were kind of doing our preview. The Pabu champion Ocean. He only replayed a single champion. You know, throughout this, he played two games in Italy, and then he had Kindred, Morgana, Fiddlesticks, Volibear, Karthus, Rumble, Graves. You know, he had all kinds of games. We got the the Assassins coming up from Chaz. We got the Ahri. Praedith played a whole bunch of different stuff. Even Biopanther had a pretty good variety up in the top lane. So it was a lot of fun. And while I won't say, like, I would never bet that they're going to get out of the group, what I will say is that they could upset a team, and that could decide the group. They're in one of those situations where we talk about the positive atmosphere and their kind of like no fear attitude. They are going to come out swinging. I guarantee you they are going to have some wacky picks prepared and try to steal some games from teams, right? Try to swing for the fences here. And maybe they really surprise me and do more than just take a game. But I mean, if you lose to them, that could be you getting eliminated from groups, right? And that is really, really big. Because when we talk about PSG and MAD and Cloud9, you know, maybe they're competing for that 3-4 spot. You know, maybe there'll be a shakeup in expectations and Cloud9 or MAD or whoever really overperforms and they're not the ones, you know, kind of on the brink, but that's the expectation. If one of those teams that is on the edge of qualifying loses one game to this, that can decide your tournament.
Yeah. As well, some of the things and the areas that these picks are going to come from are born of necessity, because they were also tweeting about how literally after they won, they had no one to scrim and they just play solo queue for weeks and weeks and weeks. And they're tweeting about memeing on, Zed is on LS's tier list. Let's throw that down. Yeah. You know, they're like, they'll grab stuff from anywhere. Okay. It could come out of, it could come out of a dream, you know, the night
Dota
before.
Champion coming out.
And they're willing to do it. Okay. They're
crazy as hell.
which is such a great, you know, approach to it. And sometimes, you know, it is born of necessity. Yeah, it's a shit situation. Like losing all these top players that got exported, not only can they not field those players, but you don't get to practice against those players either. So you lose practice partners, for the team that is going. I can't read that. No, okay.
Wait, what wrap are you
us
doing,
up,
you,
wrap you us up, to... Mark. I was about to read what you just Kobe, wrote. That's
while
not
Kobe was
you
talking,
man. Over here, you just read script.
It's not even a script. It's an outline. And Azale and I are in the outline arguing back and
typing
forth
in
about
all
something
caps.
Unrelated. Yeah, and then Azale's gonna go read Azale and I's argument in this document. Anchor questions. Azale, take us away.
You're terrible, Mark. All right. This first one comes from Guy Vincentini, I believe it was.
Long time.
Hi, guys. Guy Vincentini here. We heard from Clement that Xiaohu had help of other Chinese top laners when he role swapped, even though they would play against him at some point. And we also see in chess that at international events, players will ask their national rivals to come with them and help in their match analysis. So my question is, do you think that this would be viable in League, and would other players be willing to help their opponent? Or is the coach staff just enough? I mean, imagine Authority or Impact helping Fudge at MSI. Thank you, guys. Love the show, and cat for Kobe.
I like this question, but I would like Mark to go first, because part of the beginning of the argument that he and Azale were having was that Azale wanted Mark to wrap us up on the previous point.
I did.
I was telling Mark, you need to speak up. Let's be the quiet little boy over there.
I said, I wrapped us up. I think your questions. Anyways, to answer the question, this does happen on and off. I think Rainover did it with CLG in 2016. I think, because that was when he was on Immortals, Rainover and Huni, and they lost, and they didn't make Worlds, and I think he went to help be a positional coach for them. I mean, it's happened before. It happens on and off. A lot of pro players, even not for international events, will work together. I know a lot of junglers talk together just about, like, what they think is strong and, like, things. I know top laners play a lot of 1v1s. Like, when I worked with Quas, he and Darshan would 1v1 all the time, different matchups. You have different people warming you up before games. When you're waiting to play, you have a couple hours. And like for LCS, it was very frequent that you had a couple people that you liked playing against. And so I think it's something that if you have the resources for, it doesn't hurt. I mean, it's probably going to be pretty boring for the player who's helping out, because you don't really partake in scrims? I mean, because you don't want to disrupt the flow generally. You don't want to do too much. So a lot of it would be like backseat hanging out and then giving your opinion when it's called for. So I understand why teams don't do it a ton. Especially for some people, it might be like they're like it's kind of a vacation. You play a lot. So overall, it's viable. It has been done before. Though I don't think you'll ever see a thing where like a whole team like is flown out as scrim partners or something.
So I know that this was definitely done a lot at the very beginning of League of Legends esports. When we were first starting, there were all kinds of times where I would hear inside stories of, and it really mattered where the tournament was back when we first started, because there was a more galvanizing like coalition for countries and regions wanting their representative to bring home the championship. So and I don't even know if to this day now if I should really say like any of the stories, so I just won't. But there were a lot more instances of this. And then sometimes when teams of other regions would find out, like they'd be jealous and or they would even want like, is that allowed? And, this is a crazy unfair advantage and all this, like, you know, almost even to the point of drama kind of comes out when entire countries or regions are getting behind their representative and funneling as much help and stuff as they can into it. It has super, super died down. And I haven't heard rumors even close to on the level of things from previous years, from the early years recently, because of a lot of the points that you mentioned. Like, not only now is there a lot more focus on your own competition, or do teams need to take breaks because the schedules are insane, and so any opening should be used to not burn out on the game and stuff like that. But also, I think it's because there are so many more championships now, just in history, and more regions have already won. So it's not as big of a like, oh man, we got to get ours now, and our rep needs to get it right now. So cool question though.
Only thing I'd add is also a lot of the teams have big coaching staffs now too. Right. And positional coaches and whatnot. So they maybe feel it's also less needed than it was in the past, but definitely a cool question. Think situationally could be great. All right. We got some Twitter questions here. We're starting off with a hard hitting question from Captain Flowers. What is your favorite kind of taco?
Go ahead, Mark.
I'm going to start this one off.
Tacos, Bully Azale taking Mark's spot. Mark was so excited for this one.
Alpha Store tacos, soft shell. You know, you get the pineapple in there, yeah. Cilantro, some onions. Ooh, that's good.
I like those a lot. I think the most ordered thing I got was from this place, a little hole in the wall place, and it's mostly steak tacos. The steak was really good with like little diced onions and cilantro and stuff. It was dope.
But soft or hard, Mark? That's the most dividing. Okay,
that's the only answer. Soft.
No, it is not the only answer. I know that this is going to be a dividing point. And that's why I want to drive it home. You know what? I like hard tacos better. Yeah, I said it. Okay? Everyone is going to fight me on it. Screw you guys. There is another answer. Hard tacos are lit. Okay? I grew up with it. My mom would fry them up specifically at home for us. Fresh, home fried, hard, crispy tacos. They're way better. I'll give you two reasons why, Azale.
Oh my god, still going?
No, honestly, I really do believe that. I think part of the reason
people also don't believe in evolution. You know, there's two sides to every story. Mark, they learn from birth.
There's
too,
people out there
well.
That are anti-vax, yeah. Kobe. You're not really yeah. Yeah.
Hey, they learn from birth as well. Yeah. You know,
I think you maybe no. do you like nachos? Of course you like nachos. Okay, now how far is the leap from nachos to crispy tacos? Not that far, okay? Especially if you're frying the tortillas yourself. I think one of the reasons why so many people hate and will ridicule you and are going to make fun of me for saying crunchy tacos is that almost all of the crunchy taco sources that you get from, eating out, or like, there are no good sources, okay? I agree that crunchy tacos from any fast food places, or honestly, even most of the restaurants that I've ever been out to are pretty shit. But
you can kind of just get like a nice little toast on, like, you know, sear the, yeah. like a soft taco a little bit, right? And I feel like you get the positives of both sides that way, right? Like when I go and I get street tacos, which is usually where I'll get in LA because there's some bomb ass street tacos.
Yeah.
You know, they'll always like sear it on the grill, and then it's like, you know, has it's all browned on the side, so it's got a little bit of crispy, and then they put it, you know, put in all the fillings and stuff, and it's still like pliable, but it's got that little bit of crisp.
You ain't had Mama Kobe's tacos. She'll convert you, my friend. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's
I'm willing to die on this hard shell taco.
I feel like we just moved the goalpost, because like if we're just talking about like frying it up a little bit, I do that too when I cook my own tacos.
That's not a hard shell. That's soft.
Right, exactly. So that's the thing that for me is if when I think hard shell, I think those, like, they're basically a big chip.
Yeah.
Big chip.
That's
with
hard
like
shell.
A half pipe chip. Yeah. Soft shell with some, you know, a little bit of fry on it is a difference. I'm down with that for sure.
All right. Well, we're aligned. Kobe's wrong. On to the next question here. This one comes from Medic. Do you think Damwon and Kia are still tournament favorites after the group stage? Do you think RNG are disadvantaged by not having played a higher tier team in their group initially?
Interesting. Do you think, and I think the more interesting part is the second part of it, talking about RNG and, is it actually a disadvantage not to have a stage game versus like a strong pool two seed?
I think so. I mean, I would say it's like, it's the idea that loss and being challenged can reveal the areas that you need to improve, right? And yes, you can do that in scrims too. I'm not going to deny that, but stage games are different than scrims. Mm-hmm. You know, they're usually a lot less loose. So when you are pushed, especially because we essentially have double group stage before round robin, you know, like Damwon, right? Damwon got pushed and they're like, hey, we're going to go and we're going to figure out the meta and we're going to change up our stuff and we're going to come back and we're going to be ready to go. If RNG's read was wrong, they don't really know. I'm not saying it was, but if you kind of miss out on that opportunity a little bit to be like shown some of the holes in your game.
Yeah, I was going to say a similar thing, because if you think you're the best, then no matter what, you're just happy to beat the other people, and having more competition during the stage games isn't going to throw you, because, like, well, we think we're better than them anyways. So I think, of course, it's a bit of a disadvantage not to have a tougher team in your group. How severe is it? I wouldn't say too much, because, like you said, scrims and so much more other stuff is going on.
Yeah, that's the main point, because it's really hard to make the argument that not having a good team to play on stage is better.
Yeah,
that's going to be really hard, right? I guess the thing is the degree to the disadvantage of not having a strong opponent that you play on stage. I'd say the only drawback would be that then you don't get scrims against that particular team. If it really is a super strong team, then you lose out on scrims, but you get the stage games versus them. So that's, you know, better. So I feel like there's no world where you can make the counter argument. So there is, the answer is yes. You know, that is a disadvantage, and you can liken it to, like, you know, Super Saiyans. The harder you get beat up, the stronger you become, as long as you don't die. So you need to get beat up a bit more to fully max out.
All right, we got the next one here. This one comes from Karan Sakura. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Who's your tournament MVP thus far, or what's your all-star team performed best in each position? If you guys want to hit the all-star question, I think that's pretty cool. If you have some quick answers.
RNG with Canyon. And
you're not going to swap out Crying?
The hell, Mark?
I think Showmakers had some sus plays.
Yeah, what about Perks?
Our boy Perks, yeah, huh?
What about Humanoid?
Yeah, huh?
What about El Yoya?
Yeah. What about them, Mark, huh?
I would maybe put...
What about Kaiser? What about Vulcan?
Start listing people. Challenge them.
Ming's right. Too good.
I'm
going to
go
no
through
way.
The whole Rumble stage.
That's
every
true.
Player
yeah,
in the
Ming,
Rumble
Ming,
stage.
Ming, he's got you there. All right, Kobe,
shit. I was just kidding with that last one.
Yeah.
Okay, so honestly, though, because let's... I think we,
how
do,
about
we
you can only pick one person per team? Boom.
Okay, Ming is for sure the RNG representative then.
Okay.
Canyon is for sure the Damwon representative.
Yep, I'm aligned.
Ooh, mid lane. Perks. You want perks or humanoid? I go perks.
I want perks.
I'm going perks because I'm going Armut top.
Okay. Who's our AD carry?
Doggo. Maybe?
Doggo. It's got, yeah. Doggo's,
I like that. That's a pretty good team.
Yo, well done.
All right, that's our answer.
Brain trusted that one. Way to go, guys.
All right, here's another hard-hitting question. We got a couple of them here today. This one's from Pabu. He says, the swaggiest Pentanet GG member. This one for me, I'm sorry, Pabu, you're probably fishing for yourself there. It's got to be the coach.
Yep.
I mean, like, is it even close? The coach out there with the finger guns, with the shades. He's got the cool fit. He's looking good. And, you know, every time they go to the coach cam, he's like.
All right. I'm not so much on the finger gun train. Maybe as
I
you,
love
but...
the finger gun. I just thought it was hilarious. Maybe not swaggy, to be fair, but it was bomb. He's got my vote.
He has my vote, too. Got Mark.
I would say Biopanther's the only other one who gives him a run for his money out of game.
Okay.
But swaggiest can also be in game.
Oh, true.
And then, sorry, Pabu. No way. Come on, Pabu.
Set setups.
Oh, true.
Oh, the set setups were a good one, too.
With the tower shooting you. That's where I thought you were going. That's where I thought you were going with it.
I forgot about it, but you're right.
Blind Zed is also pretty. That's got some swag.
That's pretty swag.
Unpracticed Blind Zed in your elimination game to win.
And then performing.
I'm a big fan of BM and taking tower shots while doing sit-ups, and the tower shots are actually not doing damage. You see that? That was some good stuff. I like that.
Banger tournament, banger episode. That'll wrap it up for us for now. Thank you, Honda, for making this episode possible. Remember, you can check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm for the voice questions. Send us those there. Sub to the YouTube channel. It is youtube.com/LCS. And we also appreciate the Apple Podcast reviews. Those help us out. If they're funny, might get on the show. Pretty cool. You can also continue to send us the questions on Twitter, #TheDiveLOL. The Rumble stage begins this Friday with Dom 1 versus RNG at 6 a.m. Pacific time. That's going to be insane. That'll start the day. And to finish it off, it's just as good. Mad Lions versus Cloud 9. Absolute banger. NA, EU. We'll be back next Wednesday to break down all the action. Hopefully Cloud 9 gets out. See you then.